if they're the right medicine for you, they can actually help balance your brain. If they're the wrong medicine, and this is where I learned to stop prescribing benzos, they can hurt your brain. And let me just be clear, I'm not opposed to psychiatric medications. Some people need them. I'm opposed to that's the first and only thing you do, because many of them change your brain to need them in order for you to feel normal.
Welcome to the Michaela Peterson Podcast, episode 112. Dr. Daniel Amen is one of America's leading psychiatrists and brain health experts. He's authored or co-authored over 80 professional articles and more than 40 books, including New York Times mega bestseller, Change Your Brain, Change Your Life. And his newest one, Your Brain is Always Listening. He's appeared on Dr. Phil, Larry King, Dr. Oz, The Doctors, and The View. He's treated Justin Bieber, Miley Cyrus. He studies brain scans and how to heal brains. Super cutting edge stuff. I'm going to go get my brain scanned in November to see what's wrong with me. Hopefully nothing too obvious. We spoke about SPECT scans, the type of scan he does, testing neurotransmitter levels, what causes a toxic brain, why psychiatry is failing, the worst things you can do for your brain, hyperbaric oxygen, supplements to increase serotonin, a good diet for your brain, and more. Please hit subscribe if you enjoy this content. This episode was also filmed when my dad was not doing very well, and he's doing much better. So take that into consideration while watching it, and don't be too worried about us, please. Enjoy this episode. Dr. Daniel Amen, welcome to my podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I brought you on because of your work on brains and the problems I've had with my brain and my dad has had with his brain, and I thought I could take this time to learn a whole bunch of things from you. So that's the goal. But before we get started, this is your book. I have it here. Could you give a brief background about who you are and what it is you do?
Well, again, thank you for having me. I'm a psychiatrist by training, but I learned early on that psychiatrists are the only medical doctors who never look at the organ they treat. And so for the last 30 years, I've been looking at brains. We do a study at Amen Clinics called Brain SPECT Imaging. SPECT looks at blood flow and activity, looks at how the brain works. And we built this database of about 186,000 scans on people from 150 countries. And it just informs every aspect of my life. And it's been quite the wild ride to do something your colleagues don't do. So that's been fun. But I'm also a dad and a grandfather and a husband and an author. And I love teaching people about the cool things the brain has taught me.
Okay, so before we delve very deep into that, what exactly is a SPECT scan?
SPECT stands for single photon emission computed tomography. It's a nuclear medicine study that looks at blood flow and activity. It looks at how your brain works. And it basically shows us three things. Is it healthy, underactive, or overactive? It lets me tell the health of your brain, gives me a sense of how old your brain is. Are you a girl or are you a boy? Because girls have wildly different brains than boys do. And it teaches you to actually fall in love with your brain because you want it to be better.
So do you basically bring somebody in, scan their brain, and then compare their brain to the average brain?
Well, if you came to see me, we would take a really good history because we'd want to know the story of your life. And then we would scan you twice, once at rest and once when you do a concentration task. And we know what a healthy brain looks like, right? When you've seen as many as we've seen. We also did a large study on healthy which is actually rare.
Yeah,
I just tell people, make a list of 10 of your friends and half of them need to see me or are medicating themselves. So we have a really good idea what a healthy brain looks like. And then that informs both the diagnosis, what we think is the problem, and then how we target help for it.
Okay. Have you seen, this is just way out in left field, but have you seen any evidence of psych meds causing brain changes?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
So if they're the right medicine for you, they can actually help balance your brain. If they're the wrong medicine, and this is where I learned to stop prescribing benzos, they can hurt your brain. And many of the psych meds, and let me just be clear, I'm not opposed to psychiatric medications. Some people need them. I'm opposed to that's the first and only thing you do, because many of them change your brain to need them in order for you to feel normal. And I'm not okay with that. I want to teach my patients skills and not just give them pills. And I want you to love your brain, because when your brain works right, your mind works right. People often miss that central point. Your brain creates your mind. And so if your brain is not healthy, your mind is not going to be as healthy as it could be.
Okay. Okay. So you think brain impacts mind and not the other way around?
Well, if you're an undisciplined thinker, that'll have a negative impact on how your brain actually works. But I often think of it like hardware and software. You got to get the hardware right first and then work on programming it. And too often, in my new book, Your Brain is Always Listening, I actually have a brand new 12-step program, because the 12-step program was developed 85 years ago and there's no neuroscience with it. And I'm like, step three for me is get your brain right. And then it's just so much easier to get control over the addictions in your life.
Okay. So you had said this recently on a podcast, but I'm really open, but I'm also fairly skeptical. And your stuff is so interesting. I find it, and I believe in what you're doing, but I have some questions. And some of the questions are, you'll do a scan on, say, somebody who drinks a lot, and then say, you know, the brain looks different from the average brain. They drink a lot, and that's impacting their behavior. Is it possible that the behavior is what changed the brain like that and not the drinking? Or is that just not likely at all?
Well, I mean, you can act for all sorts of reasons. The reason I've not been a fan of alcohol is it makes your brain look older than you are. And all the problems I've seen as a psychiatrist for the last 40 years, alcohol just tends to make worse. You're more likely to make bad decisions. You're more likely to beat your spouse. You're more likely to drive when you shouldn't be driving. I mean, you know, ultimately our success is a sum of all the decisions that we make. And I just don't want things polluting your decisions that you make. And I wrote a blog last year. It was our number one blog of the whole year. And it was called I Told You So. And so I've not been a fan ever since I started ordering scans. And I saw they looked older than you were. And last year, the American Cancer Society came out against any alcohol. I mean, for a big, prestigious body like that to say you shouldn't drink, because it increased the risk of 7 different types of cancer. And I start the blog with when I dated my wife, she told me she would never tell me I told you so. and she lied. It's like her favorite thing to say. and then I go, but I did tell you that alcohol is not a health food.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anything you can do infrequently that you can get away with? Like, what if this is once in a blue moon? And that goes for not just alcohol, but any drug people would be using. Like, are one-off times okay sometimes? Or is that just, you know, is it never okay and people are just not telling you about it?
Well, you know, I can't say you can never have a drink because that's probably not rational. But the more you do it, the worse it gets. And ultimately, it's about love. Like, we just finished a 30-day happiness challenge. And it's based on these seven big ideas. And one of them is only love food that loves you back. We're in a relationship with food. And I don't know if you've ever been in a bad relationship, but I've been in a bad relationship and I'm not doing it anymore. I'm just not. And I'm for certain not doing it with food or with alcohol or with other things. Does it mean I never have an ice cream cone? Well, mostly only if I go to Italy. But I just want to do the right thing because it's about love. And I have brain envy. I often say Freud was wrong. Penis envy is not the cause of anybody's problem. I've not seen it once in 40 years. It's brain envy. We need to like get focused on love, the 3 pounds of fat between your ears, and you're going to love your life a whole bunch more.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I've got some random questions to throw at you. Is it possible to test neurotransmitter levels? Because I know when people are told they're depressed, sometimes they say, oh, you have a deficiency in serotonin or there's something wrong with your brain, you're not getting enough of it. Can you actually test if somebody's low in GABA or serotonin or any of the neurotransmitters?
You know, not with urine. That, you know, there's a lot of people that do urine neurotransmitter testing. It just doesn't seem to relate to what's going on in your brain. Because you have this thing called the blood-brain barrier, and what's in your blood is not highly correlated to what's in your brain. I mean, yes, you can do a spinal tap and directly measure, but that's a little invasive. Yeah. I often think if you have ADD, likely you have low dopamine. If you have OCD, or you have the worried kind of depression, your serotonin could use a jump start. If you're anxious, raising GABA does seem to help. I'd prefer to do it in natural ways, at least to start, see if I could get away with that. But there's some truth to neurotransmitter abnormalities can cause us to feel funky, but not easy to measure in your blood or your urine.
Okay. So when somebody, people are all aware of my dad, he was on antidepressants, then he was on benzodiazepines, and then they just like ruined his life. And what you're told when somebody's on benzos or SSRIs is that when you take them away, so if you end up having a dependency on them, you take them away and then your body has a problem with, say, GABA. How do any scientists know that that's the case?
So they really infer it. So from the scans, what we see is low GABA goes with excessive activity in the limbic or emotional parts of the brain. And so giving things that raise GABA, gabapentin would be one, tends to sort of calm that down. Magnesium tends to calm it down. And so in this country, we pass out benzos like candy. And it's just insane that someone can go to the emergency room for a panic attack and end up with Xanax, and no one ever taught them diaphragmatic breathing. And it's like, really? No one ever taught them simple hypnotic or meditation techniques. They're giving them a drug that changes their brain and they can become dependent on it. And that's insane. I mean, it's really insane because all of us in medical school learn the first year, first do no harm.
From what I've learned from the doctors I've spoken with, especially ones that are like purely mainstream, is that most doctors aren't aware that these kind of medications actually cause brain changes. Like, they didn't know that. They assume that, well, I don't think a lot of them know that they're dependence forming, especially something like an SSRI, but I didn't realize that you could do scans that could show brain. Do you have brain changes before and after medication?
I do. And I have positive changes for people who are on the right stuff and negative changes for people who are on the wrong stuff. And so when I met Tana, when I met my wife, and I looked at her scan, because if I'm dating you and I really like you, I'm looking at your brain. It's the most important part of you I want to see. And she told me when she had thyroid cancer in her 20s that she got depressed. And I looked at her and I said, I hope they didn't put you on Prozac. And she goes, why do you say that? Because they put me on Prozac and it disinhibited me. She did things that there's no way she would have done without it. And she has sleepy frontal lobes. So the front part of her brain is low in blood flow. What Prozac does is it lowers it further. And so for the right person who starts with a busy frontal lobe, you know, they're worried and rigid and inflexible. And if things don't go their way, they get upset. Well, Prozac tends to calm that down and they feel better. But if you start with sleepy frontal lobes, it calms that down, which basically takes the brake off of your behavior, and you end up doing or saying things you wouldn't normally do or say. And she has a new book out called The Relentless Courage of a Scared Child. And there's a whole chapter on how Prozac made her a different person.
That's wild. Okay. My background, I've got a weird health history, but I was on Ciprolex, a ridiculous amount of Ciprolex for almost 12 years. And I had the same disinhibition, you'd say, for sure. It did seem to help, but it totally messed me up. And I haven't been on it for about 5 years. Getting off of it almost wrecked me. Like, I had 2.5 years of just, I had some visual hallucinations. It was absurd. And I'm fine now. I fixed things with diet. But Ciprolex was crazy. I remember trying an SNRI, and I only took it for 2 days because I was absurdly angry. I had Wellbutrin. I ended up having a seizure. It was really interesting to hear about after going through some of these things.
So no one ever looked at your brain, I assume?
No. After I had a seizure, that's not true. After I had a seizure, I had a scan, but they're like, no, everything's normal. But it was, a CAT scan, probably?
Right.
So
is an anatomical scan, which are very rarely useful in psychiatry. But what I'm trying to do, I hate the words mental illness. Hate those because they shame people. They stigmatize people. Call someone mental, that's not a good thing. And they're wrong because these are brain health issues that steal people's minds. And that idea, everybody wants a better brain. Nobody wants a mental illness. And, you know, with a lot of celebrities coming out, I have a mental illness.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's not going to be helpful. What's going to be helpful is I want a better brain. And when I got a better brain, my mood was better. My focus was better. I was less anxious. So I wrote another book called The End of Mental Illness, because we need to have a different discussion about this. We want people to develop brain envy and the habits that get them a better brain, because that's how you treat depression. That's how you treat anxiety disorders. The new fads of ayahuasca and magic mushrooms. And I'm just like, come on, we can do better than this.
I like magic mushrooms. But it wasn't what transformed my health. What transformed my health, I think, was diet and mindset and getting off of medication. That's what, like, changed my life. This episode is brought to you by Grass-Fed Beef Organs by Ancestral Supplements. Ancestral Supplements makes New Zealand-sourced nose-to-tail organ meats, bone marrow, and beef organs in simple, convenient gelatin capsules. Traditional peoples, Native Americans, and early ancestral healers believed that eating the organs from a healthy animal would strengthen and support the health of the corresponding organ of the individual. For instance, the traditional way of treating a person with a weak heart was to feed the person the heart of a healthy animal. Similarly, eating the kidneys of a healthy animal was believed to support urinary ailments and overall kidney health. Pancreas was fed to people with digestive problems, and spleen was fed to people with immune and blood deficiencies. Our early ancestors knew this, which is why their traditional diets included the frequent and nourishing consumption of nose-to-tail organs. Visit ancestralsupplements.com to see what they can do for you. Ancestral Supplements, putting back in what the modern world has left out. I hope you enjoy the rest of this episode. Okay, what do you do? So you must deal with a lot of people who have dependencies and addictions and brain injuries, and that's why they're coming to you. What's the kind of person that comes to see you?
People who want a better brain. They've read one of my books or seen me on television. People who failed. So on average, our patients have failed 3.3 providers and 6 medications. And they want a different approach. Yeah. And we do a formal outcome study on everybody we see, because that's our core value, is outcomes. We want people to get well.
Yeah.
85% of people come to see us at 6 months or better. And we're really happy about that. Not everybody, and we clearly don't know everything. But if you don't look, you don't know that a traumatic brain injury may have changed your life. Stephen, as an example, he's a musician, and he gives me permission to share this. He and I did a Facebook video that got like 8 million views, Stephen Hilton. And he's depressed his whole life and found methamphetamines. And he said that turned his brain on when he was 16. And then he found alcohol. But even when he went to treatment and got rid of those, he had struggled with depression his whole life. When I saw his brain damaged to the right front, damaged to the right temporal lobe. Now, he'd seen like a dozen psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists, and no one had ever asked him, so when did you have a brain injury? Because you could see it on the scan. And he said, no one's asked me that before. He said, I was 3 years old and I fell down a flight of stairs. I went to the hospital. And he said, do you think that fall could have caused a lifetime of depression? I'm like, absolutely could have. Undiagnosed brain injuries are a major cause of homelessness, addiction, depression, panic attacks, suicide, ADHD. Put him in a hyperbaric chamber, put him on some supplements, taught him not to believe every stupid thing he thinks. His brain is better. He's better, which means his marriage is better, which means his ability to be a parent is better. And if you don't know, you're flying blind. And why is that okay? I just don't understand why that would be okay. I mean, why do we treat the brain with less reverence than we treat the heart, right? You have chest pain. They're looking at your heart in 5 different ways.
Okay. Definitely. So do you have a ridiculous waiting list?
We have 10 clinics around the country, and we're just crazy busy. But, you know, there's 40 of us, or psychiatrists. And we love what we do.
And there's 40 of you guys.
Where are you?
I'm in Canada, not forever, but in Canada.
Yeah. So
I feel most people aren't aware. Like, I wasn't aware you could go somewhere and get scans that showed brain activity. I've seen that in documentaries. I didn't realize that was something you could do other than, you know, an MRI or a CAT scan.
Yeah, so no, we did. In fact, the Canadian Association of Nuclear Medicine. I've been at war with my colleagues for 30 years because they've been telling me I'm crazy and I can't see what I see. And I've been called every bad name you can think of. But when you see, you cannot unsee. And so to go back to making diagnoses based on symptom clusters with no biological data, no, I can't do that. That's just ridiculous. Recently, in May, actually, the Canadian Association of Nuclear Medicine wrote new procedure guidelines for brain SPECT imaging, basically as if I wrote them. And they said it's time to use this. And I'm thrilled about that. It was like one of the happiest moments of my life when, you know, I had a group of a professional scientific body go, come on, let's start looking, because if you don't look, you don't know.
Okay, so when someone comes in, you show them their brain and you show them how it lights up differently than the average brain because you've scanned hundreds and thousands of them. That's correct?
Right.
And then you change their, like, you talked a little bit about how you told him not to believe everything he thought, which I think is really important. So how does that end up changing your brain? Or does that end up changing your brain? Or
so when you come to see me, so if you came to see me, history, look at your brain, and then develop a plan. And I always think of people in four big circles. It's like, what's the biology? What's the physical functioning of your brain and body? Got to get those right. What's the psychology? How are you thinking? What's your development like?
Yeah.
What's the social circle? How are you getting along with the people you care about? And the spiritual circle, which is why the heck do you care? What is your deepest sense of meaning and purpose? So biology, change your diet. Going to probably supplement your brain. If you're schizophrenic or brittle bipolar, I'm probably going to add medication in as well. Psychologically, I'm going to teach you to kill the ants, the automatic negative thoughts, the thoughts that come into your mind automatically and ruin your day. There's nowhere in school where they teach us to manage our minds. And so whenever you're sad or mad or nervous or out of control, I want you to write down what you're thinking. And we're going to investigate it to see, is it helping you or is it hurting you? I was 28 years old and in my psychiatric residency before I learned I didn't have to believe every stupid thing I thought. And there's also a fun technique I give my patients called give your mind a name. So gaining psychological distance from the noise in your head. It's actually, there's a great scene in the new Disney movie, Luca, where the main character, you know, his friend teaches him to give his mind a name and tell it to shut up. It's really fun and fascinating. But really working in those four circles, it's what I want you to be a whole, healthy, happy person. And that doesn't come from taking this or that medication.
I think I was in grade 5 when I decided that some of the thoughts I was having didn't make any sense, but I was having some pretty wild thoughts. Have you seen brain scans on people with akathisia?
I have. So akathisia.
Is there a pattern?
Low basal ganglia activity. So the basal ganglia is involved in smooth motor movement, and it's not healthy in people who have akathisia. Why do you ask?
So my dad, from taking psych meds, has akathisia. We've been battling it for a number of years.
You know, and one of the things I think is when you have a neurological condition, whether it's akathisia or aphasia or Parkinson's disease or even early Alzheimer's disease, it's critical to then put the brain in a healing environment. And too often, doctors never talk about that. They don't talk about, your diet. They don't talk about things like hyperbaric oxygen therapy. They're like, here, take this medicine or that medicine. And that's it. And that's insane. Because the brain is an organ like your heart is an organ. And it's going to get better or worse depending on what I do today.
Have you seen things like Alzheimer's and dementia and Parkinson's improve after looking at scans and changing diet and adding supplements?
I have. In fact, I wrote Preventing Alzheimer's in 2004, and I did a follow-up to it recently called Memory Rescue. It's one of my most popular books. And if you have Alzheimer's disease, you need to look at the brain because there's so many different roads to Alzheimer's disease. It's not one thing. And, you know, Michaela, if you said, hey, Daniel, what's the single most important thing you've learned from 186,000 scans? Mild traumatic brain injury ruins people's lives and nobody knows about it. The second thing I learned is all psychiatric illnesses, all of them, are not single or simple disorders. They all have multiple types. So giving someone the diagnosis of depression is like giving them the diagnosis of fever or chest pain. It's ridiculous. It's like, well, what's causing it? It's not telling you what's causing it or what to do for it. And Alzheimer's disease, I have this great case of this guy who was diagnosed by his neurologist with Alzheimer's disease from Seattle. He came to see me and I scanned him. The pattern for Alzheimer's disease was described in 1989. Bilateral parietal, top back part of your brain, temporal lobe decreases. Classic. Well, he didn't have that. What he had was big ventricles. It's something called normal pressure hydrocephalus. And draining the extra fluid in his brain gave him his memory back.
Oh, my God.
But how would you know unless you looked? And so Alzheimer's can be caused from you have the genetic tendency to it and you have too much buildup of a sticky plaque called beta amyloid. It could be caused from head trauma, from infections like Lyme. And I know now because I have hundreds of COVID brains. COVID is not good for your brain. And for some people, it can damage their brain. So infections, toxins. I just recently doing a program with firefighters. Almost all of them have toxic brains because of the toxic fumes.
What does a toxic brain look like?
So it looks like the alcoholic brain. So if people go to my Instagram and they can see the shriveled, bumpy brain. But what if I see it and you're not a drinker, you're not a drug addict?
And oh, my God.
I did Dave Asprey's brain, the founder of Bulletproof, and his brain just looked terrible. And it turned out he was living in a mold-filled home. So mold can do it. Things like Lyme disease can do it. Anesthesia can do it for vulnerable brains, near drowning can do it. It's like, if you don't love your brain, so many things can hurt it that people just aren't aware of. And I'm like a psychiatrist, why do I care whether or not you live in a mold-filled home? Because it'll make you depressed. And if I don't fix that, you know, Prozac isn't fixing your mold-filled environment.
I'm so horrified right now. Like partly because if you have a brain problem or a neurological problem, looking at a brain seems like a really obvious option. And I didn't realize you could look at the brain like that. How do people not know about SPECT scans? And why is that not the first step in diagnosing a neurological or psychiatric disorder? That's insane. Oh my God. Wow. You've been doing this for 30 years. You must be so frustrated.
Not for lack of trying on my part. But, you know, the reason it didn't sort of take off when I got fascinated by it is it directly opposes the diagnostic system. So the diagnostic system is you tell the doctor your symptoms, and he puts it together in a diagnosis. Like when Lincoln was depressed in 1840, he went to his doctor, told him what was going on. His doctor said, "You're depressed," and then treated him. It's the same thing that happens in 2021. And when you look at it through my eyes, you go, "Well, that's insane." Because how do you know why they're depressed? Is their brain working too hard? Is it not working hard enough? Is it hurt? Is it toxic? And if you don't know, you fly blind. And that's why psychiatry is diminished. And it's their own damn fault, because they're not embracing what other medical specialties do, which is imaging. What other medical specialist wouldn't look at the problem? Not one.
So what do you do for somebody who's already brain damaged? I mean, most people listening to this podcast are like, shit, I fell down the stairs, broke my head open when I was two. I was like, was that the cause of all my health problems? Maybe. Like, I feel like everybody has something. Who doesn't have a concussion? Doesn't everyone have a concussion?
So I did the big NFL study. When the NFL was lying, they had a problem. And I've scanned and treated 300 NFL players. High levels of damage, right? That's not a surprise. Nobody's surprised by that anymore. 80% of my players get better when I put them on a rehabilitation program. So if you see your brain, if you learn to love your brain, well, you can make it better. I mean, every day by your behavior, you're making it better or you're making it worse. And if we can see it, then we just get serious about, okay, let's do these things. I'm in a new movie called Quiet Explosions. It's on Amazon Prime. And we took athletes and soldiers and just everyday common people who were struggling with their moods, their behavior, their emotions, and put them on a rehabilitation program. And it's so exciting. I mean, it's been my life the last 30 years. I mean, why would I do something where my colleagues hate me? I don't like it when people don't like me. I mean, I hate conflict. And now all of a sudden I'm in a war. But you go to war because you believe. And it was always the stories. It was the stories of transformation. I have a story I tell, and somebody posted it online, and it got 40 million views. And I tell my hero story. It's like, so why do I do this? Well, I do it because I love it, and it's interesting, and it makes me a better doctor. But in 1995, my 9-year-old nephew, Andrew, attacked a little girl on the baseball field. For no reason. And I'm horrified because I love this child. He's also my godson. And when I scanned him, it turned out he had a cyst the size of a golf ball occupying the space of his left temporal lobe.
Oh my God.
And when they drained it, his behavior completely went back to normal. So was he bad? No. He was sick. And if we don't understand that.
Yeah.
We just continue to hurt people, shame people, label people. We can do better.
What's the type of scan people use to look for cysts or brain scan or brain tumors or something? What's that type of scan?
So an MRI or CT are great to look for tumors. SPECT will give you an idea about it, but it's not the right study for it.
Okay. So MRI is for actual physical masses, but SPECT for activity.
For activity, you want to see the pattern. So I published a large study on 21,000 people showing I could show the difference between emotional trauma and physical trauma. And that's really important.
Wow.
Because emotional trauma actually leaves a signature pattern in your brain. So if you grew up in an alcoholic home or unpredictable parents, or you were robbed, raped in a fire, earthquake or hurricane, it actually takes your emotional brain and heightens it. Well, for a lot of people, it stays that way. And so they're always looking for something bad to happen. And I did a study, for example, with police officers who were involved in shootings, and they couldn't go back to work because they were so upset. So I scanned them, and then we treated them with a psychological treatment called EMDR, a specific psychological treatment for emotional trauma. And after 8 sessions, they all went back to work, and their emotional brains had calmed down.
Okay, this is very interesting. I'm kind of on a search to help this akathisia, and I've been on this search for a few years, and I have done everything I could possibly find: hyperbaric, NAD, every supplement that I thought maybe could work, talked to a whole bunch of people, EMDR, I don't know what else, but we've never done a brain activity scan. Because I don't know why no one suggested that. That's insane. Here I am doing MRIs.
That probably won't help.
It's definitely not.
Let me send you my book, Memory Rescue, because that's, I would think, okay, how can I get my dad's brain to be in the most healing environment? And then a scan would totally be helpful. To see, you know, is there any lasting damage and what can you do to repair it?
Yeah. How much can you actually repair a brain? Like, how damaged does it have to get before you're like, you see a scan and you're like, you know what, you're going to have some of these forever and there's nothing you can do. Like, how much recovery can somebody with brain damage get?
Yeah. It depends on what they started with and how bad the damage is. I once treated an 18-year-old girl who had a door fall on her head when she was 2, and it killed her frontal lobes. I wasn't going to get her that much better. But 95% of the people we see, they get better when they do the things we ask them to do. You know, compliance is really important.
How important is belief?
Well, I think belief is central to, they've actually studied this, that if you believe in the doctor and the doctor believes in his method, everything is better. But if you really have pictures and you have direction, another thing I'd think of with akathisia is there any toxic load, you know, things like heavy metals or any infections going on as well. And I have this mnemonic you'll read about in the book called Bright Minds. You want to keep your brain healthy or rescue it. So with akathisia, we're going to rescue it. If the brain's headed for trouble, we have to prevent or treat the 11 major risk factors that steal your mind. And we know what they are. And, you know, part of it, so it's not just a scan, it's a scan. And then we go through these 11 things and go, okay, which of them do you have? And which can we attack? So Bright Minds is the mnemonic. The T is toxins. When I think of akathisia, I think of toxins.
Oh, but, yeah.
You know, the B is for blood flow and R is retirement and aging and I is inflammation and G is genetics, H is head trauma and so on. We're just like going, okay, how do I put the brain in a healing environment?
Can you tell me what mine stands for too?
So the M is mental health issues, so ADD, anxiety, depression. The second I is immunity and infections. Who knew? And there's going to be a whole subspecialty of psychiatry in 30 years on infectious disease psychiatry. And COVID is going to lead the way for that. COVID and Lyme. The N is neurohormone disorders. So if your hormones are right, your brain isn't right. D is diabetes, overweight, or have high blood sugar, Yes, is sleep. And so getting sleep. Those right is essential.
So do you diagnose sleep disorders as well by looking at what areas of the brains aren't active or are too active? Can you see that on brain scans?
You know, what we can see is if you're not a good sleeper, because overall blood flow will be lower. And if you have sleep apnea, where you snore loudly, stop breathing at night, it actually shows what almost looks like an early Alzheimer's pattern in the brain with damage to your parietal lobes.
Wow, this is crazy. Okay. Do you ever give out advice, like what are the top three worst things you can do for your brain?
Well, number one is not care about it.
Or think it doesn't matter. Yeah, what you do doesn't matter.
And I live in Newport Beach, where we have more plastic surgeons than almost anywhere in the world. And I'm like, we care more about our faces, our breasts, our bellies, and our butts than we do our brain. And that's just insane. So it's being oblivious. That would be number one, not caring, being oblivious. Having a sad diet, so the standard American diet, and allowing your children to do brain damaging sports. It's just dumb to let a child hit a soccer ball with their head.
Just do anything other than that. Yeah. Okay. When you give diet advice to people who come in, what are the overarching themes?
Real food. Colorful. Well, so number one is high quality calories. Calories matter. When 72% of us are overweight and 42% of us are obese, you know, let's not forget chemistry. Calories matter, but quality matters as much or more. Water, because 80% of your brain is water, 70% of your body is water. Healthy protein at every meal, because it helps balance your blood sugar. Healthy fat, lots of it in your diet, because 60% of the solid weight of your brain is fat. Colorful, low glycemic, high fiber fruits and vegetables, and get rid of the bad stuff. Things that are artificial, things that are sprayed with pesticides, and learn to take care of your gut, because your gut, you know, it's sort of a tie. It's really not the second brain. It's part of your first brain. So food really just matters so much.
Okay. What kind of recovery have you seen using hyperbaric oxygen? You mentioned that.
You know, I published a study on it in soldiers who were involved in blast injuries, and significant improvements to blood flow to the brain. I've seen a lot of great results from it. If anybody has low blood flow in their scan, it's one of the things I'll recommend for them.
What about, do people have high blood flow?
Sometimes. Oh, people have OCD. Often they have too much activity in their brain. Sometimes with seizure disorders, we'll see a focal area of increased activity.
And so do you not recommend that those people do hyperbaric oxygen, or is it still a healthy thing to do?
Well, if your brain is healthy and has good blood flow, I don't see hyperbaric oxygen making things better. Now, it's approved for a whole bunch of wound healing indications, you know, like if you have a diabetic foot ulcer. I've also seen it help with wounds in the brain, like head trauma or strokes.
Okay, interesting. Do you know anything about saunas and brain health?
Well, if I flip my camera around, I actually have an infrared sauna in my office here.
Do you have a clear light sauna? What kind of sauna is it?
I do. I have a clear light sauna.
I'm so jealous. Saunas made such a difference to my mental health when I was coming off of SSRIs. It was like diet was first, but I had this horrible impending doom feeling, and getting in the sauna would eliminate it for a number of hours. I had no idea why.
Because it activates heat shock proteins, and it tends to calm you down. There's actually a study in JAMA Psychiatry where just one sauna session had antidepressant effects. And people who take the most saunas have the lowest risk of Alzheimer's disease.
How could that be? I know there's heat shock proteins, but do you think there's more to it? Have you thought about that at all?
Well, you know, if you want to get rid of the toxins, you can drink more water, you can stop drinking alcohol, you can eat more fiber. But one of the best ways is to sweat with exercise or toxins. With a sauna, getting rid of the toxins in your body.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Maybe lowering inflammation. Okay. This is fascinating. How much, because my audience, this is going to be a question asked, how much are these brain scans and everything you do to treat these people?
It depends on what we do. We have all sorts of different packages. You know, we have our most popular package is our 6-month package. It's about $4,500, 2 scans, history, seeing the doctor a number of times. That's our most popular package.
Over a period of 6 months. Yeah, that's pretty good with the scans. Okay. Interesting. Okay, let me see. Thank you very much. That answered a lot of things. I might have to come over there and see what this looks like. How you use supplements in part of your treatment. So how do you increase something like serotonin with supplements?
So I have 2 supplements that I love, one called Serotonin Mood Support that has 5-HTP and Satureal, which is a saffron extract. And then we have something that I take every day called Happy Saffron, saffron, zinc, and curcumin. All of them independently have studies showing it decreases depression and improves mood. And rather than steal your sex drive or your ability to function, I always hated that about the SSRIs. You know, they come between people in a bad way. That saffron has actually been shown to enhance mood, memory, and sexual functioning. And I'm like, well, why wouldn't I do that first?
It doesn't cost as much.
Yeah, that the, you know, first do no harm, which is why I got excited about supplements about 30 years ago.
I think people just don't believe it, right? You've been taught one thing for so long that you're like, well, no, drugs work. Supplements are for California hippies.
Yeah. And who would benefit with that message? It's the pharmaceutical industry. So they'll perpetuate it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, the benefit of supplements is you never have to tell an insurance company you're taking them. As awful as it sounds, taking psychiatric medication.
That's dark, but true.
With your insurability to get life insurance and long-term care insurance, disability insurance, they're less expensive. They have dramatically fewer side effects, but not no side effects. And the downside is, well, they may be more expensive for you because insurance companies don't cover them. And your consultant for supplements is usually the teenage clerk at the health food store. So you might not get really great information. So on PubMed today, there are 15,000 scientific references on SPECT. And let's just take St. John's Wort. Their 29 randomized controlled trials showing it's as effective as antidepressants with, you know, like a quarter of the side effects. So let's just not say something to play to the media, you know, let's, you know, talk in truth. And there's a lot of science. People just don't know it because that's not their job. So they believe when their doctor says, oh, there's no science.
Yeah, fair. If you're on something like an SSRI too, you're told not to take St. John's Wort. So obviously there's something to that, or 5-HTP for that matter.
Yeah, because, you know, you may end up with too much serotonin. So you want to have a practitioner you trust to give you guidance.
Okay. Did I read? Is it possible that I read something online about EMFs and SPECT scans?
You know, it's possible. I don't know a reference off the top of my head. There are a lot of people that are very concerned about electromagnetic fields and its impact on the brain and 5G and all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm concerned. I'm not sure what we can do about it, except if you're going to be in a vulnerable state, protect yourself as much as you can.
I was hoping I didn't have to be concerned about EMFs. I was like, that seems too far. I don't want to worry about that.
I think it just depends. If you're doing great, do the simple things, you know, and brain health, basically, it's these three things. Brain MB, gotta care. Avoid things that hurt it, know the list, and do things that help it. When you're suffering, you have to really ramp that up. And that's where things like EMFs might come into play.
Okay, that makes sense. If you already have some damage and you're super sensitive. When I had SSRI damage, I would say, I was very sensitive to fluorescent lights. They were horrible. And now they don't bother me as much. That seems
interesting. Well, there's this funky thing called Irlen syndrome, IRLEN.com. Very common in people who've had concussions. And people become light sensitive, and certain colors of the light spectrum can actually give them headaches, can give them depth perception problems or reading problems. And putting on colored filtered lenses makes a huge positive difference for them. So if that anybody in your audience relates to that, Irlen, IRLEN.com, they have some self-tests. And I've had so many great victories from helping people by sending them for an Irlen screen.
And so they're wearing colored glasses, not just something like a red light, a blue light filter?
Everyone. I have a hockey player now who had a wicked concussion. When you see the guy hitting him and then his head hitting the ice, it was awful. And then he was very light sensitive, and putting on the glasses, his headaches went away.
Wow. Brains are insane. Okay.
Brains are cool.
That's crazy. Do you also do, okay, last question, we're running out of time. When you bring people in, do you do like micronutrient testing and vitamin testing to make sure they're not low in vitamin D or something? Like, do you do kind of an overall search, or is it mostly the,
okay. Because if your vitamin D level is low, you're going to have a harder time getting well. If your testosterone, even as a woman, if that's low, you're going to have a harder time being happy. We'll check your iron level, for example. It's critical. Low iron goes with ADD, goes with anxiety, goes with insomnia. High iron goes with premature aging. So there's a whole list of labs we generally order on our patients.
Wow. Okay. That's very cool. Well, I guess my last question. What is it like? I've looked you up. I've followed you for a while. I know you deal with a lot of celebrities. What is it like being a celebrity doctor?
It's just like being a doctor with... I mean, all my patients are cool. Some of my celebrities, like I'm in Justin Bieber's docuseries Seasons, and like many celebrities, he'd show up, he wouldn't show up. He'd do what I say, wouldn't do what I say. And then one day he came into my office and he said, my brain is an organ, like my heart is an organ. He said, I think I get it. If you told me I had heart disease, I'd do everything you said. He said, I'm going to start doing everything you say. And he got so much better. So at the beginning of the pandemic, Miley Cyrus called me up and she was freaking out like everybody else. And as I helped her, she goes, will you go on Instagram with me tomorrow and help my followers? And the thing I love about that is it expands the message.
Yeah.
And so if you can get people like Miley and Justin saying, I suffer, it normalizes other people who suffer. So it's been a blessing for me.
Okay. Well, if people weren't aware of who you are, where can they go to find you and follow you?
AmenClinics.com. So Amen, like the last word in a prayer. Imagine growing up with that last name. AmenClinics.com. Or they can follow me on Facebook at Dr. Daniel Amen or Instagram at doc_Amen.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming on. That was very interesting.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed getting to talk to you.